A pen? You can have a pen. Okay. So we're back in 1 Peter. And the title of our sermon today is Submit Yourselves, Part 2. Okay. So just a little reminder of our past week's activities. We had our craft night. We had a lot of crafts, some crafty people out there.
Oh yeah.
And of course, Gabby leading the way as she always does in any craft kind of thing. Okay. And then we had our preparing of bags yesterday. There was a lot of bags and they were heavy, you know, there's a lot of cans. And I think we made about 400 of bags. So we had a nice turnout.
Yes, we did.
And speaking of Thanksgiving, thank you for coming out. And of course, we have tomorrow morning. We'll talk about that later.
All right.
So we're back in 1 Peter. Like I said, the title of our sermon is Submit Yourselves, Part 2. And we're in let's remind ourselves of what the themes of 1 Peter are. The glory of God, the sovereignty of God, the suffering of Christ, our own personal suffering, and a call to holy living. I kind of highlighted the three that are going to be emphasized today, but these themes come back every single time you turn around in the book of 1 Peter. But speaking of calling to holy living, in this section, Peter's calling us to holy living in submitting yourself. That's an aspect of holy living. And we're going to look at five different areas, four of which Peter discusses, one of which came up actually in our Bible talk on Tuesday night. And I found that an interesting coincidence because we're doing 2 weeks, Sunday to Sunday, on submitting to one another, submit yourself. And then where did we end up in Hebrews? We started in Hebrews 13, verse 4. Sure enough, submit yourself. So God kind of worked it out. I did not plan it that way. God worked it out. So we're talking about submitting to governing authorities, submitting to masters, bosses, professors, to church leaders, to husbands, and the principal thing, and the reason Peter brought this subject up, is submitting to sufferings and persecutions. On the way in, who was it? It was Kevin, asked Michael, "How's your day so far?" And Michael listed off about four sufferings in a row. All right? But from this sermon today, he's going to learn that he needs to rejoice in that suffering and accept it as because God is in control. And that's just real stuff. All right? So two weeks ago, we saw two things that God is calling us through Peter to submit ourselves to. First of all, he asked us to submit ourselves to every human authority. Every human authority? Yes, every human authority. What about bogus ones? Well, put the context there. What was the chief human authority and governing authority in the lives of the people to whom Peter was writing? Rome. And who was the emperor of Rome at that time? Nero. So I rest my case, you know, when he says to every authority. All right? Exceptions. Again, as we go through each of these things, other than the fifth one, we're going to say, yes, submit, even if they're harsh, even if they're not just. But there are exceptions, right? Why do we submit to governing authorities? Because, as we saw, because God has told us to do that. Because it's God's will, and because in doing so, we could maybe help them become a Christian, right? But what does it not mean? We found out by going to Acts 5 and other places, it does not mean you submit to governing authorities if they're telling you to do something that is sinful, or gray area, if they're asking you to do something that offends your conscience. And then we talked about submitting to your slaves to masters, right? And we immediately kind of changed that application to worker to boss, and student to teacher or professor, right? Got it?
Yep.
And See, we believe that God is sovereign, and therefore we believe that we can submit to even unjust professors. Didn't we have, we had that discussion just yesterday, didn't we? We had a discussion about unjust professors and the Christian attitude towards that, which is not to gang up and have all these discussions about how terrible they are. But on the other hand, there's the exceptions, which is, yeah, but you know what? Sometimes you have to turn them in to their bosses, right? Because of what they're doing is unjust, not to you, but to someone else. Got it? So slaves in reverent fear, submit to your masters. For us, workers, students. Why? How? It says in verse 19, because in all situations, no matter how unjust, we are conscious of God. In other words, we believe that God is sovereign and in control, and it allows us to behave very differently from the world. Ultimately, what we found out, the key is, do you trust God? What's our example? Well, in this case, it's Jesus, right? Who entrusted himself to God, and he had some things being done to him that were not exactly really nice, right? What it does not mean, again, if your boss, or if your professor, or if your whatever who's over you asks you to sin, you don't do it. You let them know, I'm not going to do it, right? And we need to, and by the way, you can look for another job, and next semester, look up on Rate My Professor and find a better teacher, right? Got it? All right. Now, then, on Tuesday, again, call it a coincidence or call it God's working, we talked about submitting to leaders, right? Hebrews 13. It says, remember those who are over you in the Lord, those who are hard among you, submit to them, right? And so I'm just going to very, very briefly mention a little bit about that, kind of fill that idea out a little bit. It says, why? Who would it be of benefit to submit to the leaders in your church?
Everyone.
But yourself. Yeah. Yourself, right? Yeah. And actually, I wrote a whole book on this subject.
Yeah.
I wrote an entire book on the relationship between members and leaders. All right? Yeah, there's all kinds of Christian books on leadership, but nobody ever writes books on membership. All right? And so I was in a meeting, this was many, many years ago in San Diego, and they were discussing, it was kind of the elders and ministers kind of bringing in opinion leaders to kind of get direction. And they asked, what should we do? And people said, I think we need more classes on leadership. And I said, all right, you know what? I think we need classes on membership because we got some lousy members. By the way, I'm not looking at you for any particular reason saying, it's just you happen to be there, right? All right. And so I wrote a book called Golden Rule Membership. All right. And the proposal of in that book is the golden rule, right? Treat others as you want to be treated. So here's the rule that I came up with. This is the golden rule, but it's my version of it for members, which is the members ought to treat their leaders as they would want to be treated if they were in fact actually the leaders. Okay? You got that one down? All right? Because if you were the leaders, you'd want your followers to follow. All right? And if you were leaders and if people did not agree with what you were doing, what would you want them to do? Right. Don't rebel against them. Don't write a letter about them and publish it to everybody. Go talk to them. Right? Yes. All right. So, I would say on this topic, support your leadership, even when you don't agree with them. But if you strongly disagree, let them know.
Yes.
Let them know. Because if you were a good, loving leader, you'd want that. Right? So I want a leader who is actually, by the way, when I wrote this book, I wasn't leading anything. I guess I was leading a Bible talk. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It's kind of inconvenient teaching this when you're the leader of the group to talk. It's kind of uncomfortable to bring up this subject when you happen to be the one who's the leader. But what can I say? But when I wrote this book, I was not leading anything in particular, okay? So it was easier to write it. All right? But I don't know about you, but if I'm in a church, I want the leader to actually lead.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And so if they have to constantly be checking their back, both to make sure that people are still there, and also so they're not getting bitten in the back. All right? That's not a good thing. No. Right? So we're going to move on to the next thing. That's just 5 minutes on that subject, because we're going to get to the to our scripture. Now, this is kind of a strange sermon, all right? Because we're going to read advice of wives submitting to their husbands. All right? And how many wives do we have in here? Only two.
But it's for the future.
All right. Well, it's for the future, but actually, everything he teaches you, submit yourself to the governing authorities, applies to all these other things.
True.
Everything he says about submitting to your bosses applies to all these other things.
Yeah.
So these are general principles, and Peter is just giving specific examples. And what he's really doing is setting up the main argument, which is submitting to suffering and persecution. All right?
Yes.
And it's all about trusting God. But we're studying the Bible in context, so we're doing it. In fact, one of the people that came here, I was assigning them what to preach, and I mentioned, well, why don't you preach 1 Peter 3, and he came back and says, I'm going to skip verse 1 through 7. Didn't want to preach that one.
Yeah.
All right. Good. All right. Let's read it. 1 Peter 3, 1 through 7. All right, trust me, or if you don't, let it happen. This will apply to you, I guarantee you. All right, God's word to wives will also apply to Noe. All right, wives in the same way. Now, what do you notice right away? Wives in the same way. In other words, just like disciples submit to the governing authorities, just like student allow yourself to learn from your teachers, even if they're not very good teachers. He says, wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives. When they see the purity and reverence of your lives, your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to adorn themselves. They submitted themselves to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her Lord. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Husbands, in the same way. You get it?
Yeah.
In the same. It's different but the same. It's different but the same. In the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives. Treat them with respect as a weaker partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life so that nothing will hinder your prayers. Okay, great. So let's talk about that. So he says, wives, in the same way, submit, right? In the same way. All right, in what way? Well, let's remember the reason, that, just going back to the early, chapter 2, the reason we're submitting to the governing authorities is for the Lord's sake. So why submit to your husbands? For the Lord's sake, right? It also said because as Jesus entrusted himself to God, so you, wives, entrust yourself to God. And just like he said that it would cause the unbelievers to come to faith, you might help your husband possibly come to faith. All right, got it? The word here to for submit is the same one in all the other scriptures, which is hupotasso, which means put yourself under their authority. So at work, you put yourself under the authority of your boss. All right? And in a marriage, I guess, the Bible seems to be saying the wife should put herself under the authority of her husband. All right? But he's talking about God, honoring God in the context, in the face of suffering and justice. So is this to apply to a wife who has an unbelieving husband? Or does this apply to a wife who has a believing husband? Both. All right? Well, which one are you more likely to have to go undergo unjust suffering, if it's a believing or unbelieving husband? Obviously. So that's what he's addressing, right? He's directly addressing, right? He says, who knows? You might even win him over by your humble, submissive behavior, right? Amen. All right? But that's your professor. Mm-hmm. All right? That's your roommate. Right? That's your parent. That's your... So, yeah, we're talking about wives with husbands. We are. So, but I want to, again, remind us that this is really something that all of us can and should learn from. All right? So you say, but we don't have any unbelieving wives with unbelieving husbands in our church. Well, no, I don't think so. And Jan could say, well, maybe it'll happen later. Okay, that's true. But all of us are in situations like that. Okay? So we can all learn from it. Now, in this passage, does Peter qualify his statement, wives submit to your husbands, except if they have lousy plans? Or if they're not very effective leaders? Or if they consulted you first, etc.? Does he qualify it?
No.
No. By the way, we're going to qualify it. Remember I said? I promised you. Because in this, in all these things, Peter doesn't qualify. Just do it, all right? But I think for the sake of completeness, I'm gonna qualify it for what it's worth, just to help us think through it, okay? So, in what ways does he suggest wives to win over their husbands? Or, for that matter, for any of us to win over, really, anyone for that matter? And the answer is, he's asking those women to trust in God. Alright? In any situation. Alright? So, thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four that happened to you this morning, you know, it's trusting God. And by the way, as we're walking in, Mike was saying, I'm trusting, he was totally trusting God. And that's just the example that I heard about, you know, 15 minutes ago. Alright? And what is the evidence of trusting God in this case when the wife in relationship to her husband? And he says two things. He says a gentle, right? A gentle and quiet spirit. Well, what's that mean? A gentle spirit is one which is willing to give way, is willing to give precedence to the other person, not insistent on your own rights. Got it? And if we're applying this, wives to husbands, I'm applying this to Emma and her friendship with Josh, or vice versa, right? We got it? All right? A gentle spirit, then, is one which is willing to not get one's way. So think about your relationship with your wife, husbands and wives who are here. Okay, got it? A quiet spirit is not one which stops talking. God is not telling women to stop talking. If he did, that'd be a big mistake because it wouldn't work, I guarantee you, all right? I guarantee you, all right? No, he's talking about having a quiet confidence in your suffering, in your studenthood, in your employeehood. It doesn't mean, though, you can't explain to your boss if he's treating you badly. But what it does mean is you have quiet confidence in God, and everybody can see it. That's the thing that the wife can win her husband over because of. I know that was a bad grammar. My mother would be turning over in her grave, but by the way, my mom's would have had her 99th birthday late this week, so that's the thing I've been thinking about a little bit. Anyway, so we would win our husbands over, if we had one, not by criticizing him, not by resisting what he's trying to get you to do, not by trying to change him, all right, but by having a gentle and quiet spirit, all right? And by the way, as I've said, and I'm going to keep saying it, this applies to all relationships. Is it particular of wives to husbands? Apparently, otherwise Peter wouldn't have said it. And by the way, this thing about wearing jewelry and stuff like that, okay? He's not saying it's sinful to have a fancy hairdo. He's not saying it's a sin to wear jewelry. What he's saying is, how do you hope to win your husband over? How do you hope to win anybody over? All right? And the answer is, the most effective way is by having a gentle and quiet spirit. The most effective way is to trust God. the most effective way is to make it very, very clear to them that you really and honestly actually believe that God's in control. And then also, if you dress nice for your husband, that's great. That's awesome. It's not putting that down, all right? So Ken wants to find a wife. Okay, now it's okay to work out in the, but we all, it's no secret. It's no secret around here. Okay. All right. Working out and getting your body in good shape. All right. If that's your main methodology, it's going to fail.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. If that's a little frosting on top of the cake of having a, yes, men can have gentle and quiet spirits as well. Men can trust God when the governing authority is treating them poorly, and et cetera. Right? Got it? I think that's what we're talking about. So, how's the church gonna win people to Christ? By having great programs? By having awesome song services? No. That's frosting on the cake, and if that's there, but if you don't have a church that trusts in God, that believes that God is in control, all that other stuff is frosting without cake. Imagine just frosting without a cake. It's just a pile of frosting. That illustration just came to me, but whatever. Okay, great. So, who is his example? Now, whose example did he give when he talked about slaves to masters? It gave Jesus as the example, right? But in this case, he's talking about wives to husbands, so he talks about Sarah. Right? Sarah. Alright. Ooh, yes, I should have gone to that thing. So what about Sarah? She followed her husband out of a safe, comfortable place to go to a place that, I mean, because women, on the whole, tend to seek safety. Want to feel protected. I know it's a stereotype, but the Bible seems to kind of generally sort of agree that with that general stereotype. So what's Abraham do? Say, yeah, we're going to go on a trip and we're never coming home and you'll never have a house again. And as to a job and blah, 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 blah. Now, did it involve any bad behavior on his part? Yes, what about in Egypt? Remember what happened in Egypt? He's there, oh, she's not my wife, she's my sister. Alright? So we're talking about for better or for worse, and that's what Sarah did, the whole for better or for worse thing. So who is Sarah's daughter? It is a person. It is a wife in a situation, but it's really in some sense. Sarah's daughter is anyone who does not give in to fear. Why? Because they're trusting God. That's what's going on. So are you with God for better or for worse? Because that's what this entire, by the way, 2 more weeks. This is going to be 4 weeks in a row. 4 weeks in a row. Do you trust God for better or for worse? That's kind of the big question. Now, my example of somebody following a husband to the ends of the world, to the craziest places, like who would ever want to do that? Well, you know I'm going to use this as an example. Jen, I've moved her to 8 different cities.
What?
Yes. Boulder, Spokane, San Diego, Kansas, Wisconsin, back to San Diego, to Bakersfield and Merced. And every single time, it was because of an ambition personally that I had. Not necessarily hers. In some cases, she was pretty much definitely along with it. In other cases, maybe not so much. All right? And did Jen ever give in to fear? I'm sure she felt some fear, but she didn't give in. I keep telling the story. We're going to move to Bakersfield. And it's 3 weeks before we're going to move. I went to Africa for the next 3 weeks and left totally in Jen's hands. And I came home and the house was mostly packed up and ready to go. Like, okay, great, let's get in the truck. I'm only exaggerating a little bit there. All right? So, submit yourself to governing authorities. Submit yourself to your bosses, your teachers, and wives, submit to yourself to your husband. And it's, but then he gets on the, he's got the husband thing going, right? All right, by the way, what it does not mean that wives should be silent. How do I know that? Well, read 1 Peter 1:7, where it basically says to the husbands, listen to your wife, listen to your wife, which means that his wife is
talking.
So this gentle, quiet spirit, it does not mean you don't talk and voice your needs and concerns. Definitely not, it does not mean that. All right. Also, it does not mean submit to your husband, which in order to do so, it would require you to sin or to violate your conscience. That old violating of conscience things always brings up gray area things. Get some advice. And also, do not allow yourself to be abused. All right? And just in all of our Christian interactions, if you're a Christian for the next 50 years, you're going to come into a situation where you're around a woman who's being abused. All right? And do not ever advise women to submit themselves to abuse. Ever. Got it? So that's another exception. Another exception is some people say, therefore, the wife should sort of be in the shadow of the husband. And I completely disagree with that. All right? Sometimes you have a marriage and the wife outshines the husband.
Yeah.
In that case, amen. All right? How do I know that? Because it's in the Bible.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Right? They talk about Priscilla and Aquila. Mm. It's always Priscilla and Aquila. Mm-hmm. Why is it always Priscilla and Aquila, the girl and the guy? Because everybody knew Priscilla was the power person in that couple. You know, what can you say? And if she's the power person, what's she supposed to do? Just, you know, not use her gifts and, you know, not shine? No. All right, those are four things it does not mean. Okay, got it? All right, now you got to talk to the husbands. Okay. Husbands, in the same way, right? In the same way. In the same way that the wife should submit herself to the husband. And again, it's different but the same. Got it? It's different but the same. There are roles, and we're not ignoring those roles. We're not pretending they're not in the Bible. Got it? In the same way, submit yourselves. To what? Well, let's reread the thing. Be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life so that nothing will hinder your prayers. So he talks about submitting wives, husbands submit to your wives and being considerate of them. Now, the English word being considerate, I think means just be nice or something like that, or polite, I guess. But the Hebrew word, by the way, it's actually three words. Considerate is, in English, is three words in Greek, I believe. And it's according to knowledge. In other words, husbands, you learn what your wife wants and needs. And guess what you need to do? You go and, yeah, I'm looking at you, Manny, because you're a husband. And I'm looking at myself. I got a mirror. Okay. All right. We got three husbands in here. And a few people that kind of want to be husbands. They're wannabe husbands, right? Or maybe we got some boyfriends too. All right, got it? According to knowledge. Or another way to translate it is, husbands treat your wives in, in an understanding way. You need to study your wife and know everything about her. And men are so bad at that. That's why Peter's saying it.
Yeah.
You know, and know her desires, know her goals, know her pet peeves. Because remember, she's being a gentle and quiet woman. In other words, she's treating you, letting you kind of have your way, which is all the reason why you need to know exactly what she wants, because otherwise she could be not treated well. So if she needs you to have a plan, then have a plan, even though you don't like having plans. If she needs you to listen more carefully before you make a decision, then listen more carefully before you make a decision. All right? etc. And if she needs you to talk, you know, the old husband, yes, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear. Listen. So it seems like men generally need to be thought highly of. You're awesome, you're great, and I'm going to follow you wherever you want to go. All right, well, then God's telling wives to treat them that way. Women generally need to be made to feel safe and beautiful, right? Oh, I forgot that. That's right. It says, treat them considerate and also respect them. And the NIV translation is, that's a lousy translation of that word. Respect, that doesn't do it. It's more like honor her. Treat her as the most special. Make her feel beautiful. All right? Husbands don't need to be made to feel beautiful. They know they're strong and awesome anyway. You know what I'm saying? All right? And so we need, husbands need to make their wives feel safe and beautiful and loved and cherished. All right? That's what God is saying. And guess what if you don't, guess what's going to happen if you don't do that? Your prayers are going to boom. All right? So a little marriage advice here. Weaker. He calls women weaker. That sounds like a put down. In fact, people have accused the Bible of being anti-woman, calling them weak. He doesn't mean that they're literally weaker. What he means is they're in a weaker position. All right? Anytime on the job, who's in the weaker position, the boss or the worker? The worker. The worker. That's why you have unions. In a country, who's in the weaker position, the governed or the governors? Well, the governed. And God is assuming that because of the nature of the relationship and they're that women are not weaker. Like I said, a lot of times they're stronger. Not physically, but in many ways. But in any case, in a Christian marriage, the wives are in a weaker position. Therefore, the husband is extremely responsible for making her feel safe. Now, I've only got about, five more minutes to go, maybe 10. But I want to get to the fifth category of submitting, all right? Submit yourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Submit yourself to the governing authorities. Submit yourself to your bosses, your teachers, whatever, whoever is over you in just whatever situation in a personal basis. Submit yourselves to those who are leading you in God's church. Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands. And by the way, husbands to your wives, except in a slightly different way. And last but not least, in fact, by far the most, because it's 1.5 chapters long, he's going to say, Christians, all right, submit yourselves to just sufferings and unjust persecutions. Okay? So let me read the next section. Finally, let me stop right there. That's so funny. Finally, he's almost exactly in the middle of 1 Peter. He's like right in the middle. He says, finally. I think, finally, you know, if somebody's preaching and say finally and they go on for another 20 minutes, you go, that, you should not have said finally. Mm-hmm. But actually, finally, all right, finally, see, that, I think that's what he means by finally. My fifth example. And the one I'm going to talk about the most. In fact, I'm going to spend almost the rest of the entire letter talking about this. Submit yourselves. This is not submit yourself to who. It's submit yourself to what. The others, okay, to God, but not in this passage. All right? He's not, I mean, yes. So let me read it. All right. Finally, all of you, be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate and humble. Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult. On the contrary, repay evil with blessing, because to this you were called, that you may inherit a blessing. Whoever would love life and see good days must keep their tongue from evil and their lips from deceitful speech. They must turn from evil and do good. They must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Who is going to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. All right? So here, what we're submitting to is unjust things being done to us, evil, if you will, or insult, these kinds of things, right? So, be willing to bear up under evil and insult. Be willing to be on a job and to be treated probably not the best for the Lord's sake, right? Because it's God's will, all right? And because you might win them over, all right? In fact, let's read Romans 12:14, which is maybe the classic verse in the entire New Testament on this same exact topic. Okay, Romans 12:14. It says, bless those who persecute you. Is that what you want to do?
Nope.
All right, bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. But be careful to do what is in the right of in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends. Leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, it is mine to avenge. I'll repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you'll heap burning coals on his head. Can you think of anybody who bore up under a lot of evil and insult?
Yes.
Who's the most famous person ever for bearing up under evil and insult? Jesus. And what did he do? He trusted God. All right? And that's, we're talking about the real world here. This is a fallen world. And you're going to be around some people who aren't going to treat you the way they should. And honest truth, sometimes even in the church, sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
And Jesus say, Father, forgive them for they
not. That's exactly right. Why should we do that? For the Lord's sake, right? He said, to this you are called, right? He said it twice now. Twice he said. To suffer for the Lord's sake. And what did Jesus do? He entrusted himself. Then he asked a question back in 1 Peter. I find this one kind of funny. There's not a lot of funny stuff in today's sermon, honestly. So not one of those funny sermons. But, all right, he says, who's going to harm you if you're eager to do good? The answer is, well, that happens all the time. Right? So he's asking a rhetorical question. He says, who's going to harm you if you're eager to do good? The answer is, that one boss I had, that's for sure. And even my spouse one time, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So what he's saying is, most of the time, like 90-something percent of the time, if you're trying to do right, it's going to be fine. It's going to go well for you. But he's not saying that the other thing will never happen to you. In fact, what does he say right after that? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. So what's the net end result of not returning evil for evil and not repaying insult for insult, but instead trusting in God? What's the end result? Blessing. But also, the eyes of the Lord, verse 12, are on the righteous. His ears are attentive to their prayer, but his face is against those who do evil. Remember, God will judge. God will repay, right? Even in verse 9, on the contrary, when somebody does evil to you, bless them. All right? If somebody is basically talking behind your back at work in order to get you fired, all right, what should you do?
Bless them.
How could anybody do that? Well, because of the example of Jesus, because of the example of Sarah, because they've learned to trust God, and they actually believe that God's in control. They actually believe that because of repaying blessing with evil, says, you're going to inherit a blessing. So the question this morning is, do you really believe that? And none of us totally believe that. All of us at least partially believe that. But the question is, are you willing to believe it more, I guess, than you have up till now? That's what you're going to be asked. All right? Even if they do. Actually, even because they do, right? Even if they do bad to you because you're doing good. All the more reason to do this, because guess what? In fact, next week's sermon, that's going to be the fun one. Yeah, always be prepared to give an answer. That's the fun one. So I'm stopping right before the fun verse. Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone to ask you to give the reason for the hope you have, but do it with gentleness and respect, right? Because you know what? You might win them over. So we'll talk about that. So to summarize this morning, submit yourselves. Part D. Part B. Part B. It comes down to this, folks. This is, by the way, this message is just as much for me as anybody else here, right? Alright? Are you able to trust God's providence that He has your back? That He will care for you and that you will be vindicated? But are you willing to let Him be the vindicator and not yourself? Are you willing to bless those who curse you? Ultimately, you will be blessed. All right, that's our sermon.
Amen.
Got a song here. Power in the Blood. All right.
Let's stand up. Now is the time of our service. We'll focus on the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ.
I am a poor.
Whoa. Zoom has like this autofocus feature that's like tracking my face.
It is creepy.
Here we go. Would you be free from your